SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Much more from the first full Sunday slate in the National Football League to kick off the 2024 campaign. Welcome to hour number two to start off this new week. It's a Monday on the early line. He is Donnie Wrightside. I am Ben Stevens. Divisional duel yesterday in Indianapolis between two up-and-coming teams in the AFC South. The Colts closed as a 3-point home underdog against the Houston Texans, the odds-on favorite to win this division after a triumphant win of the division a season ago. Houston does win in Indy. High-scoring game that featured a ton of points in the fourth quarter. C.J. Stroud leads the Texans to a 29-27 win. Again, Indy covers at home as a 3.5-point underdog. Total of 48.5 skies over. DRS, both teams scored 14 points in the fourth quarter. They scored on five straight possessions. Touchdown, touchdown, yeah. Touchdown, touchdown, touchdown between the two sides, starting with about 6 minutes left in the third quarter from that point on. Houston wins, the Colts cover. Anthony Richardson put a couple of things on display yesterday that make you optimistic in what really is his de facto rookie season. C.J. Stroud solid to begin his sophomore year.
Here's the difference, right? And again, they're two different quarterbacks. Don't get me wrong here. Both have a lot of talent in each direction. But C.J. Stroud, 24 of 34, 234 in the air, two touchdowns, no interceptions, a 115 passer rating, and a QBR of 73.8. Now, you saw the electricity from Anthony Richardson, but this is today's NFL, Ben. We can't be playing football games 9 of 19 and expect to beat good football teams in the Texans. I understand there were some crazy catches, some deep balls that were completed here for Richardson, which does show you the athletic talent. But I need to see more in that passing game, because if I'm going to get a 2-point loss and my quarterback only completing 9 passes, I say, boy, if I could get this guy to drop back 25 times and complete 16 or 17 balls, we really got something here at this point. So I don't want to knock Anthony Richardson. And your point is very valid. And we've talked about this ad nauseum. It's really upsetting that we didn't get to see Anthony Richardson do this for 17 for games last year, have a full offseason healthy, and say, you know what? Got my hard knocks last year. I'm ready to be a better player and a better passer. Because it's not as if we said, man, in college, he threw the ball 55 times a game and had a 60% completion rating. That wasn't the case with Anthony Richardson in Florida. Correct. We knew his arm strength, maybe the best in the NFL. We knew his athletic talent, maybe the best in the NFL, which includes Lamar Jackson. He's electric with the football, but we need to see more consistency. But that only comes the longer you play. And let's focus on Houston, which what I really love. C.J. Stroud was great. Joe Mixon, coming over from the Cincinnati Bengals. I didn't know technically what we would get, but you know what I knew we were getting? Mm-hmm. A veteran player that's been around the block that on third down would pick up the blitz and be a capable runner. 30 carries for 159 and a touchdown opening day on the road against a division rival. Absolutely fantastic. Nico Huge. Collins, one of those guys where you're saying, how good can he be now with a wide receiving core with even more mouths to feed? 6 for 117, tremendous. Stephon Diggs comes over. 6 for 33. Oh, no, that was bad. How about two touchdown catches hitting pay dirt here? I really liked what I saw out of the Texans. The upside on the Colts is there, but these are the growing pains you're going to go through. In games you could possibly win, you need your quarterback just to be better in the pocket.
DRS, you said it. Only 19 attempts for Anthony Richardson throwing the football yesterday. Just 9 completions, 212 yards, 2 touchdowns. And the first touchdown was glorious. A 60-yard strike as he was under pressure in the pocket, backing up off his back heels, showing the arm strength to the nth degree. 56 yards on the ground and a touchdown. Anthony Richardson played in 4 games last year, 3 of them complete, but played in 4 games, or 3 of them now complete with the opener in 2024. He has 5 rushing scores. Keep an eye on his anytime touchdown price. But C.J. Stroud set an NFL record for a rookie last year, 177 attempts without an interception, the most passing attempts for a rookie quarterback before throwing his first career INT in NFL history. He had 5 interceptions all of last year to 23 touchdowns. touchdowns. So he's not going to turn the ball over often. He did not yesterday in both of those two touchdowns to the newly acquired Stephon Diggs. And you mentioned Joe Mixon. Have to be optimistic. However, just if there is one blemish, it's Houston covering numbers as a favorite with C.J. Stroud. Now just 3-6 against the number. And they are not going to be the pesky underdog that comes out of nowhere. They are the team with the expectations within that division. Let's go to the international opener in Sao Paulo on Friday night because it happened since we last spoke. Donnie, your Eagles, 34-29, the victory over the Packers, covering as a 2.5-point favorite, a total of 49.5 tied for the second highest of the weekend, still goes over. There's a lot of things to take away. It's been about 72 hours, but one thing that stands out, Saquon Barkley, DRS, 24 carries, 109 yards, 2 touchdowns, 23 receiving yards as well, another receiving score. 3 total TDs for Saquon Barkley in his Philly debut.
There are very limited things you can take away from this game, and it's understandable. And even I was saying this to myself. You guys know I'm an Eagles fan, right? The Eagles won the game. That's all that matters. That's massive in the standings. I get that. But even if the Eagles had loss, I don't know how I grade either side of these teams, because the simple fact that the NFL went to Brazil and allowed them to play on that field, which is par for the course. We see them go, you know, over into the UK and Germany and have ice skating rinks as well, and that's what happened. That's embarrassing. That should not happen. So when you're trying to grade the pass rush of either team, you really can't. The offensive line from really every team, you can't. The pass catchers going out there going, I hope I can just stand up, because there's a lot of drop passes on Green Bay side. Just because, do you ever run a route and slip around and then have the football and try to recalibrate? You're not going to make that catch. So when I say to myself, I love the Eagles win, but I don't know how effective that's going to be for the season. The same thing with Green Bay. It's a shame that Jordan Love got injured late, because I take the same takeaway. I'm not downgrading the Packers because they lost that game. This was a coin flip and just a battle of attrition to who's going to get the win. The one thing that did, you know, I want to say maybe some food for thought for this season. Jalen Hurts, even though he's 20 of 34, 278, and 2 touchdowns, he made some great plays in the pocket. But at the same time, he made some of the stupidest decisions you can make. A big contract guy that's played in the biggest games here, you know as well as I do, you just can't turn the football over. If you're aggressive and turn the football over, sometimes there's an understanding. Brett Favre did that a lot. Hey, one-on-one play down the field, let me throw it up for my guy to make a play. Doesn't make the play, gets intercepted. But when you make some of those, like, hey, we just need points on this drive, and throw into 3 and 4 guys on lobs over, like, back across your shoulder into the end zone, they were terrible. That needs to be cleaned up. So I wish I could say, like, man, unbelievable win. It wasn't. Terrible loss for the Packers. It really wasn't, outside of Jordan Love. It's just so tough to grade a game, Ben, where you're just trying to hang on for dear life on both sides here and make plays on a terrible field.
Jalen Hurts, 2 interceptions, a bad snap from Cam Jurgens early in the game. Philly did course correct. Well, we're going to look at the market movement for both teams now. Philadelphia, a big win over an NFC contender, albeit in Brazil. Still minus 140 to win the division. Plus 460, Philly vaults in front of the Lions despite Detroit's victory on Sunday night. 5-1 to win the conference before the season got started. Now plus 460. You see the substantial movement for the Packers. 5-1 to win the NFC North moves back and nearly triples in price. 9-1 to win the conference, now 17-1. 18-1 to win Super Bowl 59, now plus 3,400. Not just because they lost the season opener, but because of Jordan Love injuring his MCL, his knee, late in the football game as the Packers tried to come back. We'll have Dr. David Chow, of course, a staple of our Mondays, recapping an NFL weekend in hour 3. Donnie, there is a sigh of relief, perhaps, in Wisconsin that it's just an MCL injury and not the feared torn ACL. He is not expected to be out for the season. That is Jordan Love, but is going to be on the shelf for some time.
Almost deja vu, 1991 NFL season, the Philadelphia Eagles looking to win the Super Bowl on opening day. Randall Cunningham, the ultimate weapon, blew out his knee against the Green Bay Packers, and almost looked like the Eagles might have returned that favor. Thank goodness that didn't happen, because as long as he comes back, this is still a playoff team. The Green Bay Packers are good. You might be able to get that discount now if you buy in, and he's back sooner than later.
Malik Willis, acquired as the backup in Green Bay during the offseason. College football reactions next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Our first full Sunday of this NFL season, our second full Saturday of the college football campaign in 2024. Only two ranked versus ranked matchups, a part of 75 FBS games on Saturday, our largest Saturday slate of the entirety of the year. But the first ranked versus ranked matchup in the noon Eastern time slate on full display, a top 10 tilt in the Big House. Third-ranked Texas, now ranked second in the country. You'll see why in just a moment. On the road in Ann Arbor against the Michigan team, fresh off a national championship, riding a 23-game home win streak. The line ballooned DRS to a touchdown, at times even north of a touchdown in favor of Texas. The line movement, the lofty spread, it was all correct. The Longhorns dominant over the Wolverines, 31-12 in the Big House. Michigan scored late to finally find the end zone. It did not really matter. Texas wins in dominant fashion and easily covers as that 7-point road favorite. Total of 41.5 does trickle its way over. Donnie, the time is yours. Michigan looks lost in its second game of its first full year with Sharon Moore as its head coach.
Now, you guys know me on my Saturdays. A lot of the times it can't just be in front of the TV. You know, life goes on. Right. The kids got soccer games. But you know it's a big deal for me when I come home from the soccer game and got to get on and voice my opinion on the X machine out here to put a video out to say, hey, you need a pep talk maybe, Michigan Wolverines fans. You got what you wanted here. You sold your soul. You won a national championship. But these are the ramifications. And the jokes write themselves here, right? Harbaugh's off to the pros here. He got paid. It's not a big deal. They're going to get some wonky sanctions that aren't going to make any difference. But now that you can't cheat and steal signs, here's what happens. Good football team comes down. You don't actually know what the play is. You get hammered 31-6 into the fourth quarter. Game ends up 31-12. But also, what did we expect from Michigan? Yes, they're a high-ranked team. They're still a quality team, but the Texas Longhorns are so much more talented. You know who played quarterback last year for the Texas Longhorns? It's Quinn Ewers. You know who's probably going to be a first-round pick? Quinn Ewers. You know who you lost a first-round pick in J.J. McCarthy to Michigan to the NFL. You lost your head coach to the NFL. This is what's going to happen. I didn't expect Michigan to win that game. I did expect Michigan probably to do a little bit more, but that line movement during the week told you everything you needed to know. 3.5 to over a touchdown because everybody was watching week number one saying, ooh, I don't know if that Michigan offense is all that good. And I understand, hey, look, they're at home. They're going to play great defense. They're going to hand the football off. Texas is way better than Michigan. This is what was supposed to happen there.
And Donnie, the thought was Michigan covering north of a touchdown as an underdog with a total of 41.5. Michigan was going to keep this game low scoring. It was going to be a defensive war in the trenches. Texas answered the call and perhaps even brought the fight to the maize and blue. The Wolverines only 82 rushing yards. I thought we were going to see much, much more of Alex Orji, the more athletic running quarterback for Sharon Moore, because I thought they would focus on the ground. Texas, the fourth best rushing defense in the country, limits the Wolverines on Saturday. Davis Warren, not good. 204 yards, a touchdown, two interceptions. Again, that touchdown really late in the football game when it was really out of hand. Quinn Ewers has been great against ranked foes, and he was solid on Saturday. Not 300-plus, but 246 and three touchdowns. Did not turn the football over. Michigan had the second-best passing defense, DRS, in the nation a season ago. First 10 games of the regular season. Nobody reached 200 yards against Michigan through the air in its final two. Talia Tungavailoa, Kyle McCord throw for well over 200 yards. Michael Penix Jr. did that in the national championship game. But, of course, Michigan won each of those two. They did not cover against Fresno State week number one. Mikey Keene threw for more than 230 yards, and Quinn Ewers throws for 246 on Saturday. Five of the six quarterbacks that Michigan has played as of late have gone for more than 200 yards. So Texas vaults up to number two in the country in the AP poll released yesterday afternoon in more substantial movement. Better price to win the SEC, but on top of that, DRS, plus 550 to win the national championship, minus 600. 500 for Texas to make the college football playoff. They still have an SEC slate to get through, but winning this game with that impressive resume builder and a non-conference test is huge for Steve Sarkisian and his Texas club to get back to the college football playoff for a second straight year.
That's a catapult game, right, Ben? You take a look and say, okay, I'm going to go on the road against a top team opponent and beat them by double digits at the end of the year. As long as Michigan does resurface as it's still a top 20 team, when it's all said and done, that is a massive win for them. And if you're looking at tie-breaking scenarios, if everybody comes in with one loss, that's a massive victory to have in your cap. But also, flip it over to the other side, Michigan does drop down to 17, Ben. They got 1 week to really get it together. Arkansas State at home. Let's see if they can get that confidence back. I know they beat Fresno by 3 touchdowns, but that game was within a touchdown in the fourth quarter, because what happens after that? USC and that Big Ten schedule starts to creep in. We'll find out what Michigan has. You got 1 week to get that confidence back before you hit that Big Ten slate. But back to Texas, they're really good. We expected them to be good, and that just shows us on Sunday. You can go in a hostile environment against a top 10 team, national champion, and get that type of victory. Watch out for Texas.
Michigan now 25-1 to win the Big Ten. Seems unlikely they will win the conference crown for a fourth consecutive season. But really, DRS, they were flirting with even money, slight minus money before the year got started to reach the college football playoff for a fourth straight season. Now plus 550 for the Wolverines on their national title defense. Under the watchful eye of Touchdown Jesus on Saturday. Nice. Northern Illinois shocks Notre Dame, ranked 5th in the country at the time, as a 28.5-point underdog. Thomas Hammack and the Huskies win outright. It's the largest upset from a point spread perspective we have seen since the 2021 college football season. NIU wins 16-14 in South Bend. First ever win for Northern Illinois over an AP top 10 team in program history. What a scene it was for the Huskies.
Marcus Freeman's in some trouble now. What this does now is say, okay, Notre Dame's not in the conference, so you can't cheer on a conference championship at this point. If Notre Dame wants to get into the playoff, they have to have only one loss now. After that brutal loss, I don't think that's going to happen. And that means when you line up at the end of the season, your loss matches up against a loss like Alabama, you're not making it in. A devastating loss for Notre Dame that, quite frankly, I don't think they can win anything or even get into the playoff at this point now.
We'll talk about the Irish up next, live right here on the Early Line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
First, we give our flowers to Northern Illinois as we continue to recap the second full Saturday of this college football season in the huge, monumental upset in South Bend for NIU and Thomas Hammack, who has been the head coach of the Huskies since 2019. They've won a couple of MAC crowns in that time. And DRS, since the start of 2021, now 14-5-1 against the spread as an underdog. In the last 2 years, 5-1 against the number as a dog, 4 outright victories. But in the last 3-plus years of college football now, NIU, one of 8 teams around the country to cover in 70% or more of their games as an underdog, the best cover percentage of any team booked as a dog at least 15 times. Northern Illinois is a great program. Thomas Hammack, back at his alma mater, is a great coach. And you saw the emotion pour out for the skipper for NIU on the field in South Bend immediately after the upset. That is the beauty of college football. Now to Notre Dame. 1-1, a monumental defeat for Marcus Freeman, who has lost at home in ways that you would never want to lose at home during his now 3 years as Notre Dame's head coach. It harkens back to his second game in the home debut for Marcus Freeman in 2022 when they were upset outright as a 3-touchdown favorite against Marshall. DRS, you said the Irish are done. They're not going to reach the college football playoff. I don't know if that's the case. The odds did get longer, 3-1. They were -410 entering week 2. Only Ohio State and Georgia had better prices to reach the college football playoff. In the 4-team format, for sure, not a chance Notre Dame is getting in. They have to run the table, in my estimation, or maybe lose one other time at most. But Northern Illinois was not a team we expected to beat Notre Dame, so the concern is there. I don't know if the door is completely closed, though, on Notre Dame with the expanded playoff.
Well, here's the problem. Every single other team with one loss gets the nod over Notre Dame. They lose every single scenario with any other football team unless they lose. So I can't even pick up a team at this point that they like just a random MAC team, I guess, which, again, Northern Illinois, who is 2-0 and over the past, what, decade and a half, probably maybe the best team in the MAC, but certainly a 4-touchdown underdog. You can't lose that game at home. This is a rolling of the helmet game, Ben, right? Hey, come out of the tunnel, roll your helmet out to the 50-yard line, blow out NIU. This is a game that if Riley Leonard didn't even throw a pass in, they'd probably win the game convincingly by double digits. But they did, and they lost. But the reason why this is so devastating is, you're right, like Notre Dame is independent nationally, which means they have that NBC spotlight here. And the thing I loved about the game is I was cheering on, quite frankly, they're even lucky. Antonio Brown got injured, what, midway through that third quarter? It's like, oh, that's going to, like, there's no way. He's the only guy that can move the football. And they still won that football game, which was incredible. But I wanted to watch the broadcast because it's very unique to college football where you have a national broadcast that is a rooting interest for Notre Dame and a homer broadcast. But I actually thought they did a very good job in that game of saying how well NIU played. They even interviewed the head coach at the end of the game on their own broadcast saying how great that victory was, knowing that it's damaging to their own brand on NBC for Notre Dame getting embarrassed on that game. So I do want to shout out NBC for doing a very good job of not just sugarcoating this and ending it quickly. And like, due to time restrictions, we can't have any interviews on the field and onto your local programming coming up next. So I appreciate they did that. But for Marcus Freeman, I don't know how you survive because, as I talked about, Ben, for me, your season is done. You're going to play right up through the end of November, but again, you're not going to, hey, maybe they can win the ACC. They're not in a conference. So you can't even use that as maybe we can win it to get that at-large bid. Now, also, what fans going up to the games, like knowing that you're done for the season this early should not be the case on a team with that high of expectations. This doesn't fall kindly here on Marcus Freeman.
100-1 to now win the national championship. Again, they have very little margin of error, but we are going to see two lost teams into the college football playoff in this field of 12. How will their resume stack up at 11-1? They're in at 10-2. It's a different story for Notre Dame, but there's not a lot of confidence right now, I would say, in Riley Leonard, the quarterback, 163 yards, two INTs against Northern Illinois. Only threw for a buck 58 against Texas A&M, but was really good on the ground in College Station. Only 16 rushing yards and a touchdown against Northern Illinois. But DRS, he threw an interception when Notre Dame was up late in the fourth quarter, 5:55 remaining. Northern Illinois then played bully ball. An 11-play, 31-yard drive that took up nearly 5.5 minutes of clock. Cannon Woodhill, the 35-yarder, to win it for their – yeah, they got robbed. Should have been a first down. They should have iced away the game. I was almost so mad. But thankfully, Northern Illinois did pull the upset.
Yeah, thank God he made it.
Yeah, thank God he did. Now ranked 25th, the Huskies. First time being ranked since 2013. More college football next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Big 8 rivalry renewed on Saturday night under the lights in Lincoln, Nebraska. It was Nebraska and Colorado, and it was all Nebraska. 28-10 the final, and NU didn't even score in the second two quarters. They scored all 28 points in the first half and were dominant throughout. The Huskers easily covering as a 6.5-point home favorite. A total of 56.5 does stay under. The first win for Nebraska over their former rival in Colorado since 2010. Their first non-conference win over a power conference foe since 2016, which conveniently is the last year the Huskers got to a bowl game. All the issues that Colorado had a season ago on full display in Lincoln. Shedeur Sanders sacked 6 times. On the ground, Dante Dowdell and Nebraska were dominant in the trenches. The Huskers win 28-10 DRS, easily covering nearly as a touchdown favorite at home.
Now, we have to put things in perspective, Ben, right? It wasn't as if Colorado rolled into Nebraska as a 14.5-point favorite. They were supposed to win this game.
Correct.
Game number one, Colorado was a favorite at home, and they won that football game as they were supposed to. But on the road, I didn't think they were supposed to win this. But also, when you're analyzing the game itself, it wasn't as if, and this was a 28-24 game in the final. Raiola goes down the field, leads them to a touchdown drive in under a minute because we don't like that Colorado defense. This was turn the football game over. Colorado's a really bad football team. Nebraska's up 28-0. Can we put a running clock on in the second half? Because we don't even think Colorado can score, and we don't need to score any points. Just don't implode, and we have ourselves an easy double-digit win. That's the problem here. Colorado didn't even show up in this spot. I didn't think they would win this game. I thought the game would probably go over because I knew Colorado had a bad defense and the chance to have a very exciting electric offense. We got none of that in this game. And I think that's the most damaging thing to the brand, because if we are being honest, like, Colorado making a bowl is a very good season this year. I didn't think they would win against Nebraska, but the output on offense and the game, the way it played out, that was very disheartening, because you can't take anything away from this Colorado game and go, okay, we had a hard-fought loss on the road. We were underdogs. Let's get it together next week. That was just an embarrassing performance that maybe a lot of people didn't see coming, or maybe they did.
I saw it coming. Colorado is this team. The attention and the notoriety that is paid to the Buffs is correct. Deion Sanders has superstars. Shedeur Sanders, who is quick to throw his team under the bus, and Travis Hunter, who stopped talking in the second half when Tommy Hill was dominating him. Tommy Hill, a pick six from only 7 yards out early in the game. Colorado is a team that is plagued by their inability to run the football behind a porous offensive line, and because of that, has never gotten better than where they should be with two top five picks in the 2025 NFL draft. It was put on full display. Nebraska easily covers for their first victory over CU since 2010. Only 1-4 against the spread as a favorite a season ago were the Huskers in Matt Rule's first year. They are 2-0 against the spread as a favorite this year to start year number two. Our second ranked versus ranked matchup on Saturday night, as we look at the other scores from week two, was all Tennessee. Oh boy, Dave Doran and NC State struggling to start 0-2 against the spread, coming nowhere close to covering as nearly a double-digit dog in Charlotte against Tennessee. Oklahoma State knocking off Arkansas despite giving up more than 600 yards of total offense in double overtime. Kansas State, a beneficiary of a late offensive PI call against Tulane in New Orleans to stave off the upset. Illinois, a huge ranked victory over Kansas, 23-17 in Champaign on Saturday night. The Cy-Hawk game went the way of the Cyclones in a tremendous second half comeback, and my Syracuse Orange victorious as a slight home underdog against Georgia Tech. Kyle McCord is the real deal. 4 touchdown passes for a second consecutive game for Syracuse this year. They win outright 31-28.
Yeah, some interesting scores nonetheless. You take a look at that Tennessee 51-10 game. Didn't you sort of see that maybe on the horizon with NC State's opening performance? Like, ooh, I hope it's one of those cases, Ben, where you get much better from game one to game two, and they got much worse, it feels like, in that 41-point drubbing. But also, tough scene for Iowa, but that's what you get, Ben. There's a very low margin for error when you're going to play games that consistently are into the 30s, and they got bit at the end of that game. If you're a little bit more aggressive to end that game, trying to get a first down that ends it as opposed to run into a brick wall 3 or 4 straight times in a row, sometimes you get left out. Still a great kick by that kicker to win it, and a nice win for Iowa State.
Yeah. Listen, a very, very poor offensive performance from Iowa in the second half. It was god-awful, and that's what has to be better for the Hawkeyes. It was not. Kyle Conradi, that was the game winner. 54-yard field goal from the true freshman from Dubuque for Iowa State. Did not attempt a field goal in the season opener for the Cyclones against North Dakota. Was 2-for-3 with his first 3 field goal attempts in his college career, and hit the game winner from 54 yards out in the Cy-Hawk rivalry game. Just the third win for Iowa State over Iowa in the last 11 years. Other scores from Saturday, Alabama wins big against USF, but it was not necessarily the case. Late in the fourth quarter, they did storm back to win 42-16. Oregon getting tested. 2 weeks in a row from two teams from Idaho and a good Boise State team. Give Ashton Gentry, by the way, the running back for the Broncos, the Heisman Trophy through 2 weeks. He is a legitimate Heisman contender. Penn State struggling with Bowling Green in not so happy Valley on Saturday afternoon. Utah loses Cam Rising once again. He was in street clothes in the second half. Oklahoma tested by Houston, the Cougs covering as a 27.5-point underdog. And Clemson made a lot of people, including myself, eat their words following the dismal debut against Georgia, week number one, hammering App State and easily covering as a 17-point home favorite, 66-20.
Yeah, you had to get those vibes back, and certainly maybe that catapults K. Klubnik and that offense. But the one thing I think we can agree on, Ben, there is a lot of parity in college football, which makes for an exciting and fun college football season. Now, we've seen a couple of these teams for a couple games already. Let's see if we say this team is really bad, this team is really good, who's going to make those increases from now. But I'm enjoying it as a Miami fan. Hard-fought win against FAMU this weekend, moving on to Ball State this weekend, a 3-0 Hurricane team now ranked top 10, baby. Top 10 Canes.
DRS is not incorrect. Florida A&M, a very good team from Tallahassee. Don't know where the line closed, but I think FAMU might have covered. But outside of that, that's where things stand. DRS, how about a weekend around Major League Baseball, shall we? Some results from the weekend, significant here. Less than 20 games remain for the entirety of the regular season. The D-backs did win yesterday to avoid a sweep over the Astros, but Houston takes the weekend set. The Dodgers win the rubber match yesterday against the Guardians. Shohei Ohtani, his 46th home run of the season, matching a career best. The Mets win the series against the Reds. The Giants win the series against the Padres. Atlanta victorious against the Blue Jays. So what does all that mean? The Mets and the Braves tied for the third and final National League wild card spot, with the Padres and the D-backs still in front.
Yeah, it felt like the Mets would never lose again. So losing 3-1 yesterday on their home turf here. But again, you can only match up against winning series after series after series. That's how you get back. You can't just expect sweeps all over the place. And shout out the Phillies, who apparently wanted to watch some NFL football themselves down on South Beach, getting rocked 10-1 from the Marlins. Congrats to them.
The Padres and the D-backs had a significant lead in the National League wild card chase. Now only a game and a half up is Arizona, in front of Atlanta and New York. But it's really that two-team race. The Mets had their nine-game win streak snapped yesterday. American League, the Yankees still a half game in front of the Orioles. The Royals swept the Twins. So the Royals now in the second wild card spot. The Twins in the third. And keep an eye on the Tigers. 3.5 games out, sure, with less than 20
great
remain.
Baseball.
But Detroit only 3.5 back. They are playing really good baseball since the middle of August. Yeah. All right, that was your Major League Baseball update. Back to football. The Monday night conclusion of week one in the NFL next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Monday Night Football in Santa Clara. And what a game it is to end out week number one. Monday night to start a season for the New York Jets in year two for Aaron Rodgers. Does it bring back some very bad memories from the Monday night opener at MetLife last year for the New York Jets? Of course, just four offensive snaps for Aaron Rodgers, and then the Achilles injury that would sideline Rodgers for his first year in New York for the entirety of it. They are hoping for better as Aaron Rodgers returns home to Northern California. The San Francisco 49ers, 3.5-point favorite at home inside Levi's Stadium with a total of 43.5. What a game this is, DRS, to end out week number one. So many narratives, so many storylines. We will have some reactions to this, of course, on a Tuesday. You and the Pro Football Today gang will be live throughout on NFL In-Game Live Game Day, reacting to it all. What do you expect for tonight on this Monday in Northern California?
There's a lot of question marks. How about that to expect? And the reason I say that is we've watched a lot of sloppy football in week number one. We're also taking a look at a quarterback that hasn't had a lot of football on the field since getting injured last September, and a lot of high expectations on both sides. If you're looking from a San Francisco perspective, love the fact that they signed their all-world left tackle, got him back into camp, but he did miss all camp. We'll see if that plays out. Also, you do have Brandon Ayuk, who Kyle Shanahan's already said he's going to be on a pitch count on Monday night. It would be great if he practiced all the way through and wasn't on a pitch count, because he's one of the better wide receivers in the NFL. But both of these teams, I got to be honest, I do think it comes down to that line. It's important. It opened up the FanDuel Sportsbook in the offseason once we knew the teams were playing each other, 6.5. It got as low as 3.5, which still currently sits at the FanDuel Sportsbook, bounces 4.5, 3.5s, 4s. We'll see what it gets to at game time. A lot of other outlets right now showing at 4, but FanDuel keeping that at 3.5, a total of 43.5. It seems like these numbers are right, because if you say they're two electric offenses once they can get going, because you take a look at the Jets offense this year from last year, well, you insert Aaron Rodgers back in it, you add another capable wide receiver, your tailback should be even better improved coming off an injury from the year previous. And then you take a look at San Francisco and say to yourself, yeah, well, that offense is built, ready, made to go. Kyle Shanahan, everybody's in position. And that 43.5 sticks out. Why? Because those defenses are so, so good on both sides. But I want to buck that trend. I think we get more offense than not. Are we talking about 55, 60 points? No. But I would be very surprised, Ben, if both of these football teams don't reach at least 20 points, which again puts you in that ballpark of 43.5. I'm hoping we get a clean performance out of both sides, but I got to tell you, those points are talking to me tonight with the New York Jets. I bought into the Jets about 3-4 weeks ago, realizing I don't know how talented the Buffalo Bills are going to be. Quite frankly, they looked bad yesterday. Thank goodness they got bailed out with a terrible Arizona team and picked up that victory. The New England Patriots, yes, they won a football game, and so did the Miami Dolphins, but I still do think the New York Jets are the best team in the AFC East, but this game's going to go a long way to letting me know that. Almost feels like a referendum for the Jets week number one on the road.
The Cardinals did cover as a 6.5-point underdog in Western New York against the Bills, with Josh Allen leading Buffalo back to passing touchdowns, to rushing scores, but an injury to his hand that we shall discuss with Dr. David Chow in our third hour. But even before the opener, the New York Jets had moved to the favorites in the AFC East. New York has not made it to the postseason since 2010. It's a 13-year playoff drought. Of course, you win your division, you earn a playoff berth, and you will host a playoff game. Those are the realistic expectations for this Jets team that, frankly, if they come up short of that this season, much like last, considered a failure and a disappointment with the investment in Aaron Rodgers. First, just some trend things to note. 3.5 in favor of the Niners. DRS is right. When this line opened up in the summer months, 5.5, 6 in spots. It was 4.5 last week. It is now settled back to 3.5 in favor of the 49ers. San Francisco played in 20 football games last year, including Super Bowl 58 against Kansas City in Las Vegas. The San Francisco 49ers were booked as a favorite in all 20 games, but just 9-11 against the spread. I am intrigued, Donnie, to see the New York Jets now having the third best price in the AFC, the favorites to win the AFC East division, how often they will be booked as a dog this year. Of course, without Aaron Rodgers, they were an underdog 14 times out of 17 games a season ago. 6-8 against the number, 5 of those 6 covers, though, an outright victory. This Jets team, even without Aaron Rodgers and some of the worst quarterbacking play that you will ever see, found its way to 7 wins because of all the talent on the roster outside of the quarterback spot. This might be one of the few times, maybe 1, 2, 3 times this year in total, that Gangrene is booked as an underdog, and it's north of a field goal.
And by the way, if you take away Hassan Reddick, who still hasn't showed up for the Jets, who knows when that charade is actually going to end at this point? We're not getting any details from either side, as opposed to, unless you show up, we're not paying you. The reason I want to bring that up is everybody for the Jets practiced all the way through training camp here. You look at the San Francisco 49ers, that didn't happen. Christian McCaffrey, maybe the best pound-for-pound running back in the NFL, I think we could agree upon. Missing 3-4 weeks of practice. Now coming back, we'll see if he's on a pitch count in this game. We already been told Brandon Ayuk's on a pitch count. And yes, Trent Williams, for as good as he is, hasn't practiced all offseason long and basically inserted back on game week as a 36-year-old left tackle. Am I expecting him to be bad? Mm-hmm. Not necessarily, but you might be a little bit more winded than you actually think. So more question marks are showing up in this game. As I said, already have a lot to answer. I just want to – if I can get a Jets victory over San Francisco in game number one, boy, that hype train is going to be unleashed because you never got a chance say it. As a Jets fan coming into last year against Buffalo night number one, I mean, the vibes couldn't have been higher, and it ended minutes into that game, and now you get to see Aaron Rodgers hopefully healthy and playing. Now, granted, you saw Kirk Cousins in that game. How did he look coming back from an Achilles injury? You know, Aaron Rodgers is doing the same thing and hasn't had a lot of game film here to put out in the preseason and such. So, yes, question marks, Ben. Questions all around. But the answers, they're coming tonight.
Aaron Rodgers has played four NFL snaps in the last two calendar years. He is 40 years old, trying to return from a torn left Achilles. All the voodoo magic in the world makes it still a difficult test for Aaron Rodgers in his first NFL game action. Did not play in the preseason. What will Rodgers do tonight in San Francisco? Next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Aaron Rodgers is 40 years old. Aaron Rodgers has played just four NFL snaps in the last two calendar years since the end of the 2022 NFL season. What does he look like tonight in his season debut in 2024? If Aaron Rodgers is mediocre, in my estimation, the Jets are a playoff team, maybe even the champions of the AFC East, getting back into the NFL postseason for the first time since 2010. But what version at 40 off a torn Achilles of Aaron Rodgers are we going to see this year and on this Monday night in Santa Clara? Is it the guy that won two consecutive NFL MVP awards for Green Bay in 2020 and 2021? Or was it a guy coming off the worst 4 year of his NFL career in 2022? 235.5 is the passing yards prop tonight for Aaron Rodgers. Really hard to judge, DRS. I would say what he is going to look like tonight, what the numbers and the statistical output is going to be for number 12 in green. Perhaps white tonight, number 8, I guess, he wears now in New York. It's been a long time. But in the final 8 games of 2022, Aaron Rodgers was under this passing yards prop in 7 of 8. In his in terms of his NFL career, in full seasons where he played at least 15 games, 2022 was the least amount of passing yards we had seen for Aaron Rodgers in a full season since his first year as a starter in Green Bay in 08. What version of Aaron Rodgers will be on display tonight against this 49ers defense?
Hopefully it's a good one. And again, that's it. The fun part about this, Ben, is we haven't seen it. Like, it hasn't been like, hey, you know what? He got a lot of snaps in games 1, 2, and 3 of the preseason. He looks like he's back. Similar to what I talk about, like, let's just say younger quarterback in C.J. Stroud getting out. Like, man, he just looks legit. I can't wait to see him in week number one. Now, I can't wait to see Aaron Rodgers in week number one. But again, I don't know what version we're getting. This isn't a 24-year-old coming off an Achilles. This is a guy that's sort of at the ending part of his career with maybe 2 to 3 years left on the edge of his prime. And coming off, as you said, basically two football seasons without playing any football, as I'm supposed to say, oh, yeah, that's the Aaron Rodgers I remember from winning a Super Bowl against the Steelers like around 2010 at this point. We're not going to get that Aaron Rodgers or that mobile even of Aaron Rodgers. But the worst case scenario may be played out yesterday, and you can use that moving forward. Kirk Cousins didn't play in the preseason. And do you remember when it was like, hey, by the way, Michael Penix isn't going to play the remainder of it too. We've seen enough. That was almost code for, we hope Kirk is going to be okay. And yesterday, I'm not saying Kirk Cousins was hurt, but he looked ultra rusty and certainly didn't help his football team. I'm not anticipating that, honestly, from Aaron Rodgers tonight. But that offensive line, if it can stand up against a very good front seven for the 49ers, that's going to give me a little bit more confidence. Say, okay, maybe that first quarter and a half might be a little bit rough. Maybe he is not, because we're all human beings. Hey, last time I was out here, I tore my Achilles. Oh, no, I'm on the road in a hostile environment against a very good defensive line. Hope I don't get gets sacked like right off the bat here and I'm running for my life. Because if they can hold up and he makes those short completions to start the game, you might see that confidence build for Aaron Rodgers. I'm optimistic on Aaron Rodgers. It's not a lot of numbers. Hey, Ben, he's got to throw for 325 tonight. No, you see it right there. It's 235 and a half. Touchdown passes, 1.5, which means throw two of them. That's plus money. It's not minus 160. Attempts, 33 and a half. That's normal for a quarterback here. For Aaron Rodgers, you probably expect that to be 37 or 38 at that point. So the expectations are timid, or should I say damped down a little bit. I think he can play well, but this is going to be a great football game to watch it play out. I'd rather bet on Aaron Rodgers than bet against Aaron Rodgers.
Interesting. We'll see. I guess based on tonight, the San Francisco 49ers, third best scoring defense in the National Football League a year ago. The New York Jets, 12th best scoring defense in the NFL a season ago, but the best passing defense in all of the National Football League. The only team that limited opponents' quarterbacks to less than 170 yards per game. San Francisco, throughout the regular season in terms of defending the pass, they were in the top half of the league, but it was like their one area of weakness, if you want to even categorize it as such. Top 10 in pretty much every other category, giving up 214 yards per game. So now we go to Brock Purdy in the quarterback comparison. 237 and a half. What was our conversation around San Fran's man last year? Is he a game manager? Is he the reason this San Francisco offense is great? Is he being elevated by Kyle Shanahan? Yada, yada, yada. We have said, Donnie, and we were often on the right side, that Brock Purdy is a good quarterback. Yes, he is a beneficiary of this system, but he is a reason the system is so efficient. He did struggle in the two preseason games that he played in for the 49ers, but 4280 in terms of his passing yards output last season, that was fifth best in the National Football League. Over that number that you saw of 237 and a half in 11 of 16 games. We'll continue to break down Monday Night Football when Hour 3 starts up next on the Early Line.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.